You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 112 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is Chris and The Bolt. Hey, guys.
Hi. Wake up.
Yeah, we're a little sleepy. We made the mistake of going to a Mexican restaurant and having a huge lunch.
Huge.
And
four bowls of chips.
Yeah. We're all a little bloated and feeling a little sleepy.
I think probably listeners are used to it. I think every time we record, we're like falling asleep from burritos.
They sound like they're bloated and sleepy.
All the time, and they're always talking about right. it. Why don't they just stop eating burritos?
Yes, this time, I'm asking you too, and those of you listening, please don't let me do that again. So yeah, we're excited to be back podcasting. We've got lots of things to discuss, lots of interesting news items that have happened. We had a very exciting discussion about dental hygiene.
Yeah, I just went to the dentist this morning, and I was told that my gums are far healthier than they were. I have beautiful teeth.
Wait, let me see. Oh, lovely. Wow, I haven't noticed that before.
She said, you have beautiful teeth with hardly any staining. And I said, I couldn't tell if that was a compliment.
You drink coffee?
That's what she said. She said, you drink coffee? I said, nope. She said, that's the ticket right there.
Man.
I have beautiful teeth, but I'm more tired.
That's right. And now with the burrito, you're even more tired. I have some sad podcast news first off. Robert Lee King has declared that he is no longer going to listen to our podcast.
I don't believe it.
I think this is the second time he's declared that.
I think he's listening right now.
He probably is.
Robert Lee King is, if you haven't seen him in our comments section, it likes to weigh in on topics. On our blog at cdbabypodcast.com.
Yes, and they're always very entertaining and sometimes informative.
Yeah.
And we always appreciate his comments. Yeah, we always appreciate his comments.
But sometimes he gets upset with us based on some of the interviews we do.
And like an interview with Tom Jackson, which was the last interview we did.
Right, right. So, he didn't like it.
So, yeah. But we'll recap that interview a little bit. But before that, let's get into some music news. Well, YouTube has announced a new service that will track the top 100 music videos on YouTube.com. YouTube will mix official music videos and user-submitted videos. Rebecca Black fans need not worry. She's listed at number 8. From the YouTube blog, the YouTube 100 measures song traffic across official music videos, user-uploaded videos, and viral debuts, and uses this data to provide a holistic view of song popularity. The new chart is published weekly and shines a new light on the YouTube community's engagement and creativity. The YouTube music chart is located on the YouTube music page. For months, the rumor mills have been spinning tales of Google Music and the major label hurdles the service has faced. Labels fear rampant uploading of pirated music, but Google has pushed forward despite adversity and launched the new music service in beta. Of course it's in beta. It's a cloud-based music service similar to what Amazon launched just a few weeks ago. Basically, it allows you to store your music online, the cloud server, and access it on various devices. In a sort of news of the weird segment, MySpace just rolled out its official MySpace music app, which allows artists to copy their existing MySpace content, including songs, pictures, and videos, from MySpace to Facebook. It allows simultaneous updates across both platforms. This is a convenient tool for artists who have come to realize that music fans are becoming scarce on the MySpace network. Of course, it also makes you wonder what will happen to MySpace's advertising revenue as they let artists direct all their fans towards Facebook. And finally, CD Baby has officially launched a new music store widget that allows artists and musicians to sell directly to their fans from their own website. The widget store option is available to anyone who has music up for sale through CD Baby. There's no limit to the number of stores you can create, and the widget is absolutely free to use. And that's all the news I had.
Yay!
I feel like there's one piece of news that we're...
Oh, and in one final piece of CD Baby news, I said that the last piece was the final one, but this is going to be the final piece of news. CD Baby has recently launched CDBabyLovesYouMore.com. For those of you frustrated by recent price hikes at other distribution services, yeah, CD Baby Loves You More. Go there. We will give you 50% off your album submission if you want to move a title from said music service to CD Baby, where we definitely love you more. So,
and we don't charge yearly fees.
That's right. That's right.
A lot of these services charge yearly fees, and then, you know, that might not be such a big deal the first couple of years you're selling your album, but year after year after year, paying $50 every year, like, you could end up losing money if you're not selling a ton of CDs.
Yeah, and a lot of times you become faced with the option of having to either keep paying for an album that's not selling or pull it down. And, you know, the way I feel about it is you should keep your music up no matter what. Even if you hate the old album, we have artists who are always like, oh, I'm going to pull it down, I don't like it anymore. No, leave it up. You never know what will happen, who will find out on the internet, what might connect with somebody to cause some sales. I mean, and that's the thing that I like about the CD Baby model, is that the long tail of music is a real thing. And there's an album I've had up on CD Baby since 2004. If I had to pay an annual fee of $50, I would have pulled it a long time ago. But it still sells about 10 albums a year. And it gets some licensing action and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, that's one thing, is that, you know, there's people, there's especially, you know, for movies and TV and stuff like that, people actually go through the CD Baby catalog looking for music to use in their movie or TV show or whatever. And who knows, you know, you may not have sold a CD in 5 years, but someone might offer to, you know, license it.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting cases that I've done here at CD Baby when I was doing licensing was somebody...
Pretty Woman?
Yeah, TBS was looking for a track to put in a Pretty Woman commercial, little, you know, thing that they do to when they show Pretty Woman, or whenever, you know, how they always show old movies and they do a little marketing campaign around it. They found this song about Julia Roberts on CD Baby. The person had sold, I don't think, a single copy of their album, but they found it and they have now licensed it, I think, three times for multiple thousands of dollars each time. And if that person had been faced with the idea of paying $50, nah, it's not worth it for me to keep my music up there, that wouldn't have happened. So there's a lot of stories like that that happen. But yeah.
CD Baby loves you more.
That's right. .com. Go there, move your albums over, get 50% off. Do it now. So the widget thing's cool because it's, you know, we're finally up to 2008.
yeah. CD Baby has been in dire need of having a widget so that people can sell music on their own websites, and now we have one.
Yeah, so you can log into your CD Baby account. There's a big icon that says Music Store or Store Widget or something. You'll see it. Click on that, and you can make it and drop it into your website, and it's pretty cool. It displays the albums nicely and streams the clips and lets people buy the music, and the checkout's handled by CD Baby.
Yeah, I've already got it on my website. You guys have it on your website?
I do.
I think you put it on my website.
Oh, yeah, right. I
don't think I had a choice. But I would have used it anyways.
So, yeah. The whole cloud thing, cloud wars, is starting to get interesting.
With Google Music out there.
Yeah, apparently they got a little testy and went ahead and launched it. But, you know, this one doesn't have as many features as Amazon's, as far as Amazon has a player built in. This one doesn't. But, you know, we'll see. It's kind of an interesting move on their part. So far, it's only in beta, which Gmail is still
in
beta.
It'll be in beta forever.
And it's by invite only. And I signed up for an invite. I haven't gotten one yet, so I haven't been able to try it out.
Yeah, I signed up for one, too.
I think Phil here at CD Baby got an invite and went through the process, but I haven't asked him about it.
Well, with MySpace, I think this is on to the next topic, but they must be so desperate for artists to log back in. I mean, I get like dozens of MySpace emails a week. I just delete them. I ignore my account. But now if they have a Facebook app, I'll actually log into my MySpace account, and I'll see those advertisements they're trying to sell me.
I guess, but I mean, for me, I mean, I guess it's if you already have a pretty good MySpace page and you just want to sync all the content over to your Facebook, that makes sense. But I, at this point, I'd be looking for an alternative, something that, you know, is not, that is more Facebook oriented, and I don't have to have an extra, I don't have to go to MySpace at all because I don't like going to MySpace.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate getting their emails that don't say what the person sent to me. I think that's part of their plan. They're like, you got to log in to see what they said.
Yeah, they want you to log in.
And then I log in, and it's just a spam message, and I go, waste of time.
But yeah, I mean, they're obviously, you know, they realize that their user base is just musicians, and they're losing ground there. So
yes, it's apparently dropping off dramatically.
And it's like 60%.
Yeah, it's to the point where, you know, in the past, I'd say you shouldn't delete your MySpace page, but I think, you know, I still wouldn't delete it just because you never know what will happen, and I'd rather have that URL for my band than someone snagging it out from underneath me, but I don't think it's as crucial that you keep it up to date.
And you never know what bookers or journalists or, you know, whoever still go there. Maybe it's an old habit for them to check MySpace first, and you should at least have your songs up there.
Well, that's what frustrates me is club bookers that continue to link to MySpace. It's like, right, even when you got an official band site, they still link to MySpace, and I still see that happen all the time. So that's the one spot that, you know, I see people using it and keeps me from just deleting it altogether. But yeah, it's okay to ignore MySpace. It has been for a while, but YouTube launching a music chart. The interesting thing about this is that YouTube is kind of positioning itself to be the new music business, kind of, you know, what radio was in the past. YouTube is going to kind of be the standard for the future of what success is.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of artists are realizing that even more so now than at any other time, and they're coming up with a lot of creative ways to make videos that is not really like time intensive. They realize it's important to have your music up there. You don't have to have a professionally made music video. People will do slideshows and have their music on. You know, you just take a stack of digital photos and just play them one at a time while your music plays. And people like having that visual stimulation when they listen to music online.
Yeah, and I think this could be the very first chart outside of any of the Billboard charts that people might take seriously and actually put weight and value into. And the cool thing is that it's completely user-driven and it's completely open to anything. It's not driven by program directors at radio stations. It's driven by what people are really interacting
with. Statistics.
Yeah, and so it could be a really cool thing and a great thing for independent artists because a lot of them get on those charts, and you know, if they start determining you know, payouts and things by those charts, or those charts are taken seriously by the industry at large, and that it does help people jump into traditional radio from those spaces, that would be cool as well.
Has there been a successful attempt at integrating into one chart a bunch of different factors like album sales, downloads, licensing, YouTube views?
All of that would be pretty tough because it's not, having that in a timely manner would be pretty difficult.
Yeah, that's true. So someone should do it.
Some sort of overall popularity chart.
Be like the overall awesomeness factor.
The chart to end all charts.
Yeah.
All right, if you guys don't have anything else to say on those topics, I'd say we should move on to a little recap of my interview with Tom. Well, it was cool to hook up with Tom again. That was actually the first time I'd seen him in person since I think I had worked with him in Small Town Poets back in like 98 or 97. So I don't think our paths had crossed. We had talked on the phone a couple times, but if you hadn't heard the original episode where I interviewed Tom, it was episode number 43 back in January 2009. Wow. He talked a lot about creating moments on stage. This time around, I had, as I said, been at a music conference, the East Coast Music Association or Awards. It's in Canada. It was on Prince Edward Island. Go to Maine, go north and east a little bit to an island way up there. That's where it was.
It's in a whole different time zone. It's
a whole different time zone. No, it's not.
What do they call it? Atlantic time
zone. Atlantic time zone.
Wow.
A little side note. I went curling with some of the locals there, and it was awesome. Wow. That was the best thing of the trip.
Wow. Did you drink like Labatt's or?
No, what was it called? Molson.
Molson, of course, yeah. Mm.
But it was awesome. I've got some video of that. I need to get posted. But anyway, back to music. Tom, when he goes to conferences and speaks, he does like a 90-minute session where he has a band. They play a couple songs, and then he works with them, and it's like a live makeover transformation. And it's pretty amazing to watch. Somebody who was in attendance was a manager for a really big band in Canada, and he was very skeptical and, you know, thought the idea was silly. And then he saw the makeover and was like, okay, I'm impressed now. I get it. I get the idea behind this. So, you know, whenever we have someone talking about performance, for some reason, it's so controversial.
You know, it is really interesting. And, you know, I brought up the interview actually at band practice, and one of my bandmates was just like, oh my God, that's so lame. Like some guy who teaches bands how to act and move and jump at the right time, you know, like how that, you know, and his feeling is so spontaneous, you know, that music should be just all about passion and not, you shouldn't even need to think about performance.
Yeah, but has he ever seen Stop Making Sense? The single greatest musical moment in history was completely scripted.
What happens in Stop Making Sense?
They dance, they jump, they run, but they all do it synchronized. I mean, it's a sort of extreme form of pageantry and choreography, but it's done in such a fun way that, like, they knew exactly how and when to move. And
see, I just feel like performance is better when it's practiced and when you learn and you watch. You watch the masters, you read books, you talk, you have teachers. Like, there's all these ways to get information and improve on what you're doing, no matter what it is, if it's dance or theater or music or, you know, it's just, I don't know why one kind of art form should only be pure passion without any, like.
It is funny how people get so upset about this, and it's like, if I go into a recording studio and someone asks me to play guitar and I just totally suck, they're going to be like, all right, you go home, you practice for a few years, and then maybe come back. But if I get on stage and I suck, they're like, don't tell me what to do, man. This is my art. You're like, your art sucks. I think after seeing this, you know, live makeover with Tom, the thing that I mentioned it when, in the interview of talking to him, it really became clear it's not about choreography, and I think that's what a lot of people think. It's more about building a live vocabulary, that's what I would say, and being able to understand what works where. I mean, the thing is, it's like, you know, when you're recording music or writing a song, you can play it and listen back to it and go, okay, this is interesting, that's not working there, this part would be better here. But when you're playing live, you can't see yourself. And what you think is happening is usually not what's really happening.
What's usually happening is you're just standing
there. Yeah, exactly. You're just standing there. You think, oh, I'm so rocking out. And right. No, you're not.
I think I mentioned that the last time you interviewed Tom is that I always have this perception of I'm moving around so much. My arm is flailing so much. And then I see a video. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of moving, but it's never nearly as dramatic as you think it is.
Never. And for a while, when I was in Small Town Poets, I would record almost every show on video, and I'd go back and watch it, and I'd be like, oh man, we were rocking so hard. And I'm like, I'm standing there, you know, it's not doing a darn thing. And I think everyone just needs to stop and admit for a second that their live show sucks, and then we can all grow from there. Everyone's so precious about their live show. There's a few people that are knocking it out of the park, but most people are not. And so I think everyone would prefer to be hitting a home run every time they play, because it's a lot more fun. And I think that's more of what Tom's trying to build, is the ability for you to go up on stage, have the vocabulary, no matter what's going on in the audience. Because if you're only going to feed off the audience when it's packed and they're totally rocking, that's like, you know, 5% of the shows that you have the optimum, maybe even less. And so it's got to be something where you're driving the experience, not the audience.
Well, and also, like you say, if it's a building of musical vocabulary, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to use any of it. I know a lot of writers that know really big words, but, you know, like Hemingway, He used really simple words, simple phrasing, but he had a big vocabulary, and having that knowledge helped him craft better simple sentences. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you have to be doing a flip.
Right. And you don't want to jump on the drum set every single show after the last song. But every once in a while, it's very effective.
Yeah.
Or something as simple as, you know, eye contact with the audience is something I know I struggle with because I'm concentrated on where is the mic? What are my fingers doing? Am I remembering the lyrics? Are people going to come in on time? You know, there's so many things going through my head that it's just something as simple as look at the audience in a way that seems relaxed.
And well, on a live show, there's two things going on that everyone is dealing with who's on stage. One, you're dealing with the fact that you're trying to play a song, play it well, and remember what you're doing, know what you're doing. And two, you're dealing with the fact that a room full of people are now staring at you, which is never... I don't know. Some people love that. Some people don't mind it. But it's not like, you know, if I walked you into a room of just these random people just, all right, you stand there, we're going to stare at you. It's very uncomfortable. You know, and it's those, when those things are at play, you start doing the most minimal amount of things you need to do to survive.
Right.
And that usually means standing behind your microphone, not really moving, not really taking advantage of the stage. And so with this live makeover when Tom was doing it, it was just like just getting the lead singer. It was a power trio, three, you know, the lead singer was playing guitar. There's a bass player and a drummer. And it was great stuff. Good, catchy songs. Guy had a great voice. But he was like glued to that microphone. And it was just amazing how if he just actually walked away from the microphone over to the side a little bit and looked out at the audience, what a difference it made to feeling like you were drawn into that performance. It's stuff like that. It wasn't backflips, you know?
Right.
And it's funny because the, you know, when in Robert Lee King's Goodbye Message, he said that, you know, talks about the Beatles and Led Zeppelin and people like that didn't do this. I would say we can't say that for sure one way or the other.
Do we remember all of the Beatles bowing exactly at the same time after their shows on Ed Sullivan? Like, they bowed, they walked over to share mics, they planned all that stuff, and they've been doing it for years.
I'm sure they did. But even if they didn't, even though we know they did, even if like a band like Led Zeppelin didn't plan any of that, I would say it's completely irrelevant because we're not in the 60s and 70s anymore. And, you know, the people I know here in town that go to rock shows, they go to far more rock shows than people ever would have back then.
Well, the thing with the, you know, I mean, the thing with the Beatles or the Stones or whatever is that they played so often to large groups of people that were very reactive to them.
Yeah.
So they could tell right away when they're doing something.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's an advantage as well. But also, that the people I know that love our music as far as fans and are passionate about it, they go to, like, the people that work here at CD Baby, a lot of them go to shows like 3-4 times a week.
Yeah.
And if your show doesn't kick butt, you're not going to stand out. Going to a show is not a novelty anymore. It's not a big
no
event.
Anymore.
Yeah, it's not a giant spectacle that it's like, I can't believe they're coming to town. I'm freaking out. I'm going to see them live. It's like, yeah, we go to shows. That's what we do. You know, it's not like you're going to see something there you've never seen before. Even U2, it's like I saw their latest tour. It was amazing. I was right down front on the inner circle. But at the same time, it's like there wasn't anything I saw that blew my mind. Like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they just did that. You know, it's all been done. So if your show doesn't connect with people, they're not going to care. They're going to another show tomorrow night, you know.
One of the points that I thought was really interesting this time around hearing Tom talk that I've been maybe not so calculated, but I became aware of it recently where I've been doing a lot of duo shows. I play acoustic guitar and then my keyboard player comes along, so it's not a full band thing, sort of a stripped down, intimate affair. He plays keyboards, flugelhorn, glockenspiel, and, you know, a little percussion stuff. I've got a harmonica, I sing, I play guitar, and I whistle, but we don't do it. We stagger when we introduce those things. So it'll be keys and guitar for a couple songs. Then on the third song, he'll break out the horn. On the fourth song, he'll break out the glockenspiel. You know, then I'll take the harmonica out. After people get a little tired of that, I'll whistle. And it keeps them like, they keep being like, oh, something new.
Mm-hmm.
So I think his point about diversifying or, I think he was talking about, you can't just have like great lyrics for 10 songs in a row because you'll just bore people. So you have to keep them, what's the word, stimulated.
Almost every show I've been to lately, it's like I've seen the show in the first two songs. Mm-hmm. And he mentions that a lot in, Tom mentions that a lot in episode number 43 when we talked about making moments on stage. That a lot of people, you go to their show and the first three songs, the whole show, you've seen it all. So for the next hour, you're basically just seeing that all rehashed. It's not like anything new is being introduced, anything different. I mean, there may be a slow song, there may be a cover, but for the most part, as far as what happens on stage, you've seen it all. Mm. There's no like special thing where people are playing different instruments like you're mentioning or mix it up somehow. And it, a lot of it is just working on those things. I don't know if he has his stuff, any of his stuff on YouTube, but maybe I can talk to him and getting some snippets where we can put on the podcast website and people can check it out. Because once you see it, it's different. And I think for everyone who's complaining and thinks this is a bunch of crap, that's fine. Just go video your next show and tell us what how you feel about it after that, you know. And, you know, that's all.
And, you know, he said, you video your own show, you're going to watch and you're going to see all the small details. Oh, I moved my foot awkwardly. Oh, I sang that out of tune. Oh, I didn't look at the crowd enough. But he might, you know, maybe not him, but someone, if you consult an outside opinion, might say, have an aerial view of saying, well, why don't you sort of go about this in an entirely different way for this whole song? Or
Yeah. And that's what he did with this one band. He had them start with the bridge, with just the lead singer just strumming out of time, and it opened up the song a whole lot more, and he kind of staggered the intro more and had it break down just to the instruments before the vocal came in.
So he looks at the actual performance of the song, the actual structure of the song as part of the performance,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
It can be adjusted.
Because a lot of it is, you know, like this band, it was three-piece, and the song was great, but it was just like, from the moment the song came in, it was just like on full energy, full volume the whole way. And as far as the music goes, and it just kind of went by extremely fast. And it really highlighted by the time the end of the 90-minute session, and you see how they're playing it at the end, really highlighted the song better and had the listener had time to actually hear what was going on, where everything else went by so fast. It was like a radio song.
Yeah.
That in a live setting, it's gone, you know. And
that's actually something I'm trying to work on with my band right now is more dynamics, you know, like bringing a part way down and then bringing a part way up rather than just always sort of chugging along at the same.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, it takes sometimes taking the song apart and rearranging it. And, you know, it is a live performance. It's not the recording, so you can do whatever you want.
Yeah,
it's your song. Chris, you can do whatever you want.
I played with a band a couple months ago that they started three or four of their songs in a row in the same key on the same chord, and when the singer came in, which was usually about 5 to 10 seconds after the song starts, it was always on the same note in relation to the chord and key. And I think two of those three times she came in with the same word. So much so that I was like, are they messing with us? Like, is this, because they were different songs.
God, I would screw up so much because I'd think I was playing a different song.
I was like, maybe I'm dumb, and this is all part of like a concept album.
They're just screwing with
but
us.
But I was like, whoa, we just heard the song. Oh no, it's slightly different, but I'm still bored.
All right, we would love to hear your thoughts and comments. This always ends up being controversial discussion for whatever reason. Some people love it, some people hate it. We want to hear your thoughts. Weigh in at the podcast website at cdbabypodcast.com. Just you can post a comment there. And you can also call our listener line at 206-426-5683 or email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. And speaking of phone calls, we have some of those right now.
Hello, Kevin, with CD Baby. This is Circadian Rhythms, and we love your podcast show. Thank you so much, and keep on jamming. We're from San Francisco. Love you. Bye-bye.
Hey guys, this is Anna Lauby from Madison, Wisconsin, and I am in the car driving up to Winona, Minnesota for the second annual Midwest Music Fest, listening to the latest roundtable about Seth Godin's interview. And I just wanted to say, I don't know how anybody could be mad about you guys saying that you shouldn't do your music if you just want to sell it, but that passion is what's important. I think that that pretty much says it all. And as usual, it's super inspiring to listen to you guys. I love the podcast, and it's a great thing to listen to right before playing a show. So happy tax day, everybody, and have a great weekend. Thanks again for a great interview. Bye.
Hi, Kevin and CD Baby. This is Chris Hartzog from chrishartzog.net in Seattle, Washington. Just calling to let you know that, first of all, I've listened to tons of your podcast. Never called in before, but this past weekend, my wife and I just happened to be in the Portland area, and I remembered, hey, Portland is the home of CD Baby. I got to look them up. So we Googled your address and made our way through all the rain showers and road construction to finally find your brand spanking new facility. And anyway, thanks to your front desk staff for giving us the inside tour of CD Baby, Host Baby, Book Baby, and all your babies. I kind of lost count. But looking at the huge size of your warehouse with room to grow, I can see that I and all the other CD Baby artists have to get really busy cranking out some new inventory to load you guys up. Anyway, once again, just thanks for the tour. It was nice to know that my CDs are indoors, dry, and nicely stocked. So, folks, please buy my CD and all the other CD Baby artist CDs so we can keep these guys really busy in the warehouse stock. Also, I heard some rumors while we were there of some kind of a summer CD Baby Northwest, or maybe it was West Coast, I'm not quite sure, artist event. We look forward to hearing more about that. Anyway, thanks again, and bye-bye.
Hello, this is Jay Graham from band called Big Mono. We're on CD Baby, and the band called Written So Red is on there too. Anywho, from Oregon, and long-time listener to the show. Just wondering if you could maybe talk a little more about what to do about the future dissolve of the record labels and tour support. Now the gas prices they're going to go over $5 by the end of summer. I think, anyway, and especially in the States, is there a point to play outside of your region, you know? I mean, Medford, Oregon is where I live, is 300 miles. You know, Portland to Seattle is 180 more. It's insane. Making that back on as an indie band is impossible. You know, we're doing what we can. We're making videos, we're releasing EPs like crazy. Just wondering if anybody has, if there's any solution to this. I mean, how do you eat? And that's the most important thing, is how do you eat playing music? Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it.
Well, he sounds a little down.
I know. I have a suggestion. Did he say what kind of music he played?
No. No.
They still say blowing up. My phone's blowing up.
Oh, I don't know that they do.
I'm blowing up. Lately, I've struggled with the thought that having a large band, lots of people involved, and all the time it takes and all the equipment you have to haul, we've made less money at those gigs than I have at smaller gigs in that duo setting I was talking about earlier. This has been on my mind, and I've talked about it with you guys. I make way more money because I can play at places, being more flexible. I can play at wineries. I can play at restaurants. So he could focus more locally, but in a few different modes of playing. There could be the rock band. There could be the solo thing. There could be the duo, and play a lot more. But since you can play in many kinds of venues, you have more options.
Mm-hmm.
Stay busier, because I'm actually playing more than I have in a while. But
yeah, and I mean, with touring and stuff like that, like, you know, you have to build a model for yourself. You're not just doing it for fun. If you're actually trying to make money, then you need to, you know, you need to either go on tour with someone who has a draw that's going to and, you know, guarantees, or, you know, like, you have to know ahead of time that unless there's an audience there, that a paying audience, you know, like, if you're just going and playing places that you for the first time or second time, and there's not a lot of people there to buy your CDs and merch and stuff like that, that, you know, you will lose money.
Yeah, I mean, it's in Medford, Oregon. That's going to be a tough one. I mean, you, like you were saying, it's a long haul. We happen to know where that is because we're in Oregon. So
is that what, he lives in Medford?
Yeah, he said Medford, which is in the southernmost part of the state, which is, you know, probably about, how many, 7-8 hours to San Francisco?
Yeah, maybe 6.
And then, you know, it's 4-5 hours to Portland.
Yeah, so he can basically play in Asheville. Right,
Ashland.
Ashland, gosh. Played there like 5 times.
So yeah, it's a tough spot where he's in. And, I, you know, there's a lot of artists who listen to that live in really small towns and remote places. And, you know, you got to focus locally. And that's a tough one. I mean, honestly, at some point, if you're really, really wanting to make a go and make a living at music, you're probably going to have to move from Medford. I mean, the cool thing is, though, you do have options online. There's lots of things you can do with YouTube. There's lots of things with online promotions and gathering fans online that doesn't matter where you live. But if you're going to go out and play, it's not the most ideal jumping off point.
Yeah. Artists really have to be open to the possibility of sort of rethinking the business model that they're, you know, because obviously the reasons why record labels are flailing and CD sales are changing or are going down and MP3 downloads are going up and all the stuff is changing. So is the way that, you know, artists and bands need to operate in order to, you know, make it. So if you, you know, like you're doing, Chris, is, you know, a good option, like paring things down, making things a little more affordable.
Less mouths to feed.
Less mouths to feed.
And a bigger paycheck with less mouths to feed.
There you go. Chris, who stopped by the caller, Chris, not you guys, he mentioned a couple things. One, we would love for you to stop by if you're in the Portland area. This new place where we're working is actually presentable. I think it meets OSHA standards. So, but yeah, it's a cool new place. We even have our own little marketing wing, and we'd love for you to stop by. Just give us a heads up. You are in town, and we'll be sure to be here. So
I think sometime this summer we'll be having an open house.
Yeah, he's asked about that rumor. It's June 23rd, I believe. Is that correct? June 25th, somewhere near the end of June.
Yeah, we're going to be messaging all of the Northwest people, California, Oregon, and Washington about it. So.
Yeah, we're going to just have an open house, and we're still not sure what's going to happen, but something will happen. And
something crazy.
We'll have some snacks.
And we all should be here. So, yeah, come by, check that out. And then Anna and the caller from Circadian Rhythm, we appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
And we're glad the show is inspiring. And yeah, that's all. If you'd like to call in and
you just sounded like Bob Ross. Glad that's inspiring.
Some happy little trees.
Just a little guy living in there. Just a little guy.
That used to be Saturday morning torture. It'd be like, oh, the cartoons aren't on yet. I got to watch this guy.
Now you like it.
Yeah, so if you would like to call in, leave a comment, share your thoughts, a story, or feedback about the interview with Tom or what we said today, call us at 206-426-5683. It's best if you keep your comments, you know, brief, under 2 minutes. That way we can get it on the podcast without having to edit you down, because otherwise it gets a little lengthy. So, I think that's it.
All right.
Word.
I think we survived. Not too bad for
I've been out of practice. I've been gone for a long time.
Yeah, you have been. I should probably mention that you can email us again, info@cdbabypodcast.com. cdbabypodcast.com for comments. Thank you. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.